What's up, everybody? It's been a long time coming. We're back and we're stronger, more quality, as usual. I know you've missed us, but without further ado, welcome to the latest episode of Fat Corner Podcast. Josh, I know you've missed me so much, yeah? You've missed my voice.
No, not in the slightest.
Yeah, but of course.
No, see, I did not miss your voice per se, but then it's good to be recording the podcast with you once again.
Yeah, man. We had so many challenges. It's nobody's fault per se. Like, it's just the situation we find ourselves in.
Let's just say the truth. It's the country we are living in, and the situation of the country is making it almost difficult to record every time we're supposed to record. So apologies. Although us shifting blame to the country is more like, so it's still our fault too. So let's say we share it 30-30-40. 30 to the government, 30 to me, 40 to Leonard.
Of course, you will give me the 40. You are shameless. No problem.
Okay, so our jokes apart, if anyone deserves more of the blame, it's actually me. So apologies. And people that should be apologizing are people like Thomas Tuchel. although. I'm not a fan of managers and players apologizing. I think it's pathetic. Arteta did it after Arsenal lost 3-0 to Crystal Palace. And I think it was just terrible and shameful. Not the performance, but the apology was shameful. Because to me, there's no point. Just do your apology in the next match. Nobody cares about your speech.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Just basically coach and kind of leave the rest for the save the best for later. And you know, you've done your best as a coach. Apologizing just make you look weak in my eyes.
Let's talk about because Chelsea and Arsenal fans might think that they've escaped the banter because we didn't record on Tuesday. Well, Arsenal might have escaped it because we can't talk about them now. But Chelsea did not. God said that Chelsea must be dragged on this podcast. So they did it against Brentford and they did it against Real Madrid. And this time, there was an awoof from Mendy for Benzema's hat-trick goal. But before we get to that mistake, how great were Benzema's finishes? I think the second header, I'm still stunned. Like, it has been days, it was days ago, but I am still in shock.
Yeah, like, you know, I said this to you privately when we were having the chat, when the fixture came out. And I told you that if Benzema were to play, like, that is the difference. That would be the major difference between Chelsea winning and Chelsea losing that game. And it actually came to... my predictions were right, and like I said, there's no finisher in the world now that's as deadly as Benzema. Like, obviously the likes of Lewand, but when you look at Benzema, it's not just the finishing. The build up to the first goal, he was heavily involved. So that's like Benzema. Obviously, Benzema has had a very good all round play, but now what Benzema has been able to do. He has now learned from the likes of Lewand, Messi, Ronaldo in him being able to start bad. Benzema has now scored 6 goals in just 2 fixtures in the Champions League. 6 goals.
Yeah, back to back. The first player since Ronaldo in the 16-17 UCL campaign to score in back to back games, like 2 hat tricks, back to back knockout fixtures in the Champions League. It's incredible. It's actually insane. The guy is 34 years old. He has played 36 matches this season and he has scored 37 goals. Who does that? And the last time I checked his assists, that was a few weeks ago. He was on 13. He might be more than that now. Just insane.
Exactly. And we need to even remember that he was supposed to get a hat trick during the weekend. He missed the penalty.
He actually missed his easiest chance of the night that he got. Oh no, the second easiest chance, because Mendy made sure he gave him the easiest one.
Yeah, man. That, like, if Benzema should continue like this, I think the Ballon d'Or is his, because I think like France will definitely do well in the World Cup. So
we'll come back to the Ballon d'Or discussion in a minute, but with the Mendy, I'm calling it the Mendy era, so you can see where I lie on the situation. But some people are calling it Rudiger's era. Obviously, both of them are at fault, but who should take the higher share of the blame?
The way I see it is, like, it has to be the goalkeeper. Because for Mendy's position, he can see the full picture of what is going on the pitch. So, for example, let me paint it like this. Let's play a different scenario. Let's say he actually gave an accurate pass to Rudiger. But the issue there is, Rudiger will still need time to control it. And that means Rudiger might have been closed down still, even if he had made an accurate pass. So the best option there was not to give it to Rudiger, was to give it to someone else. That is
bro. Which someone else? Kick this thing out to join.
Exactly.
In modern football, this total football that everybody's trying to do, we must play out the back like Guardiola. It's not for everybody. It's not for everybody. My friend sent me a compilation of like bloopers on YouTube football, and obviously everything in that video was funny, but I could see some passing out the back. It's not for everybody, guy. Clear this ball. Like I don't know if you remember that Mendy did an error against Brentford, but it was not punished. Mendy caused an error against West Ham that was punished. West Ham scored. In fact, Mendy caused two errors that day and West Ham won 3-2. Now, Mendy is reaching the levels of Hugo Lloris in terms of making multiple errors in a season. A good goalkeeper should not make more than two errors in a season, to me. Even one. But Mendy has made like 4-5 this season. And I'm like, guy, are we sure you're still among the best in the world?
I just think at the end of the day, the entire Chelsea team just let themselves down. They didn't play up to standard. I just the only person that was impressed with is Kai Havertz. Kai Havertz always. Yeah. I've said this to you so many times. I think you'll be tired of hearing it. I have never watched a Chelsea game since Kai Havertz came in. A Chelsea big fixture. Kai Havertz is always stepping up in every big game. Like, you know, for example, you know, when they speak about Drogba and look at the Drogba statistic, kids these days will tell you Drogba statistics is shambolic. But when you watch, like, Drogba was like one of the ultimate big players.
Yeah, final. Mr. Wembley, I think that's what it was called.
Exactly. Like, when it comes to big games, Kai Havertz is one of all those people you must rely on.
But then just for people who are on Kai Havertz's case, let me say something that they will be happy with. Let me say that I know Kai Havertz's talent. If we're talking about talent, you see, to me, the next generation of footballers in terms of talent, the people that I think will rule football, I don't think there'll be a Messi Ronaldo kind of head and shoulders above the rest kind of thing. I think Mbappe and Haaland will be a bit better than the rest, but not as clear as Messi and Ronaldo. Then I look at, in terms of talent, I look at Joao Felix, I look at Anthony Ajax, I look at Kai Havertz, and I feel like if all these guys fulfill their potential, then they are going to rule the game. But then the issue I have with Havertz is that he's not consistent. He only does it in the big games. And you have 38 league games in a season. All of them are not going to be big matches. You need to turn up week in, week out. And I'm sure he's going to learn it, because at the end of the day, let's be honest, Chelsea just have wingers for the sake of being called wingers, but they are not actually creative. So he needs people to create chances for him. So it's not all his fault.
Yeah, I agree. Like, if Kai Havertz needs to, like, go to the next level, he needs to be doing this week in, week out. So I agree with you 100%.
And I saw something online. Yeah, it's becoming suspicious. Just back to Benzema for a bit. It's becoming suspicious how many keepers dash Benzema goals in the Champions League. Uriek, I think when Real Madrid played Schalke a few years ago, dash Benzema a goal. Lloris Karius in the final of all games for Liverpool, dashed him a goal. Donnarumma just this season's round of 16, just the last round, a goal. Mendy now. So, like, are they scared of Benzema or what is it? Like, when you see Benzema closing you down, it's like their brain just shuts off. Like, just shuts down. They don't know what they are doing anymore.
The way I see it is, it goes back to Benzema. No, like, I get, that's obviously tells you, like, it goes back to what I keep saying. Like, why rate Benzema so highly? It's just like the same way me and you were having conversation about Lewandowski and Suarez. Why I rate all those players above Lewandowski is they offer something else. Like, for example, when you look at Benzema's movement, the way he press, he doesn't just press to block, to just like pressure you to kick the ball away. He pressures you. He cuts out the passing lanes. So he bends his run. Press you, cuts out the passing lane.
He presses, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So the error.
Just to buttress your point, I think Benzema has a high footballing IQ. Like, exactly, they are best players that to me, they just have the God-given talent. You get, but you can see some people using their IQ when they play. People like De Bruyne, people like Xavi when he was playing, people like Iniesta, people like Philippe Lahm.
Yeah, like, exactly.
To me, it's not just the talent. You can see the IQ in how they play. People like Pelo.
Yeah. So, I agree.
Maybe another day I will explain it in a deeper way, but like, sometimes you like, is easy to spot someone with a high footballing IQ by how they play. There are people that are talented, but their footballing IQ is not that high. Let me not mention names, but we know them. Me and you know them.
No, I don't know.
I was fast players, though, but their footballing IQ is not high. But let's lock up. Let's just lock up. How Thomas Tuchel said that Chelsea don't stand a chance with how they play, that if they play like this at the Bernabeu, they'll get hammered, and they cannot even win Southampton if they play like this. I think he's being honest, but then is there a problem? We talked about this thing with Lampard and Everton just a few weeks ago. Do you think he should have said it in the press, or should he have been optimistic, just fake smile, fake life, just give us one fake speech, then go to the dressing room and tell them, see, guys, we cannot win like this. So, or what do you think?
The way I see it is, Thomas Tuchel, I think he has protected his players enough. Like, let me be real with you. So many times where he was meant to do one or two, throw some people under the bus, if you like, or do like a Jose Mourinho, he has protected them time and time again, especially this period where Chelsea have had so many issues, so many crises off the pitch. He has protected them enough. And could truth be told, there's a level to which a manager can take all this. So I look at it like this is the time for honest check, or honest to have that honest conversation. And I feel like him being honest to actually play long play like it would give the players the honesty that they need, and it would give them that reality check from now to the rest of the season. Because when you look at it, this thing needs to be cut out, especially now that we are in the final stage of the season where things actually count and matters.
So to you, is it tied dead? Because some Chelsea fans are saying it's unlikely, but it's not dead. But to you now, you're looking at this as a neutral. Is it tied dead?
I think the only way I see the tie dead is because Chelsea, they don't create enough chances. Like, how would I put it? They're not clinical enough in certain areas. So I look at it like...
I just recall Lukaku. As you said chances. I just remembered Lukaku missing two good chances. And then I'm like, okay. But Benzema scored exactly the same kind of header. So what are we talking about here? The defense is just there.
Okay, slim margins. But Chelsea, they don't take their chances enough. So I feel like the only thing is I see Real Madrid scoring.
So let's let's say Kai Havertz is on his A game that day, like he's going to be the striker. We all know that. If
let me,
Kai
let me
Havertz
just, on his let A me just game, like this. Hey, let me just put like this, sir. Kai Havertz being in his A game, that is all fine and good, but I feel like Chelsea will still concede. That is just the only problem.
Yeah, that is it. God bless you for that statement. I think the tie is finished because Chelsea can score one goal. Chelsea can even score two goals. But mind you, if Chelsea score two goals, just know they are conceding two or three. Because Chelsea are not even going to win at the Bernabeu. They are going to draw or lose again. So for me, the way I look at it is, on paper, you cannot say the tie is dead. But then, from what we've seen from Chelsea, how can you concede seven goals in two matches, my guy? Like, how? So, I think it's dead. But now, another question for you. How close are Chelsea to a full-blown crisis? Because losing to Brentford is one thing. The capitulation to Real Madrid is another thing. How many more losses does it become a crisis?
No, I don't think there will be any issue there. I think they'll pass.
Okay, wait. Let me just hypothetically speaking now. Say they lose 3-0 to Southampton. Is that a crisis?
Yeah, that's a crisis because 3 makes a pattern.
Yeah, so that's why I was asking. Like, where at what point does it get to it? So it's just the next game that is the point now.
Yeah, but I've not seen Tuchel took over. I've seen Chelsea have their blips. I've seen Chelsea have their blips, but I don't think they've allowed it to extend for more than just two matches. So the game against Southampton, like you said, is crucial, and I think they'll win that game.
You think they'll win that game? Well, it's possible, but with what I've seen the last two games, I'm actually not sure. The good news for Chelsea is that Amando Broya cannot play against them because they are his parents' club. And I think that's where the good news ends for them. So, we'll see. Now, the other Champions League fixture I want to talk about quickly. Man City, Atletico Madrid. We all knew it was going to be attack versus defense. But then, for it to be to this extent, some people are calling Atletico anti-football, calling them a disgrace to Champions League, saying that this is unacceptable in the quarterfinals. Like, a whole lot of unprintable stuff being said about Simeone. What's your view on this? Are people being too harsh, or do they have a solid argument? Because I don't think it was actually good enough.
To me, I look at it half and half. I think it doesn't make any sense. Like, every football team can't have the same playing style. Every football team, if every team has the same playing style, football will be boring. So I look at it like, yes, they have a point, but still, I enjoy the match. I enjoy the match in the sense that Atleti were this very close. They're very, very close from nicking it. They didn't just knit their passes together in the final third. So I feel like Man City 2 finding it very, very difficult to break them down was intriguing. It was giving me this curiosity of how.
Trying to solve a puzzle, right? That's
exactly,
the...
exactly. So me, I find it entertaining.
If only it was the one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, obviously, people like end-to-end football, but some things like this too entertain me. So I like it. So if it's just down to everyone's cup of tea. So this is something me I enjoy and I like it like that.
Okay, so I'm going to build on something you said before I say my own. Football should be played in more than one way, and football is played in more than one way. So I'm happy that UEFA does not have a law that says you must play so way. If not, you'll be kicked out of the competition. The day they do that is the end of football. So, but having said that, my own problem is if you're setting up to defend, that means you're setting up to counter-attack, right?
Yeah. It means like obviously the thing is people forget that Atleti had like good moments in that match. It's just that they were
not. I'm coming somewhere, guy. Don't even know. You do your formation to sit back to counter attack. My problem was that they did not counter. If you set to counter, be oh yeah, guy, go and counter. That was my own issue with it. I have no problem being defensive, but my problem is when nobody, because I look at Yao Felix, I already mentioned him a few minutes ago as someone I rate very highly, but he was non-existent in the game. Not through any fault of his own, but through the fault of the tactics. My own is that if you want to defend, at least leave Yao Felix up on his own, then put Griezmann behind. So instead of playing 5-5-0, you can play 5-3-1-1 and you would still be defensive, but you would now have two people up front that you have two people who are already up front, and then you can bring midfield runners to support them. But when everybody is coming from the defensive, like their own, at the edge of their own box, there's nothing they can do. What actually pissed me off the most, why I'm even talking about this, is guy, John Stones is a center back. Oh, hope everybody remembers this. John Stones' point was at the edge of Atletico's box. It was not a set piece, it was an open play. And I'm like, this is unacceptable. If Yao Felix was keeping him company, he will not do that, because he knows that any counter attack, Yao Felix cannot be offside from his own half. So he can go and score. But he knows that there was no problem. So he was like, I might as well just come here and see if I'm the one that can score. Do you get? So if
you want to I agree with you that the tactics was extreme. But me, yeah. I still found it entertaining. That's just how I'll just sell out.
Yeah, okay. I would say it was not entertaining. My own is, if you want to actually score a goal, because they could have done this and played 0-0, Jiget, it would have been a success, but they were never going to score like that. So my own point is, you can be defensive, but you can still try to score. That's all I'm saying.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
We know Atletico Madrid are still not going to change for the second leg. Even if they are going to change, they're not going to change much. What chance do you give them of going through and overturning this and going through?
No. I think there's no chance. I think Man City will score. They will score. I think Man City will score and they'll go through.
I see, normally I don't like agreeing with you, but I cannot even argue. I don't see a way where Atletico can score two goals and then City don't score. It's impossible to me. What everyone thought would have been impossible is Bayern Munich losing to Villarreal, because when the draws came out, I was one of the people that said it was an easy draw for Bayern. And then Villarreal shocked the whole world and won 1-0. Mind you, Villarreal would be very disappointed winning just 1-0, because they had countless chances to make it 2 or 3. So, judging by that, who is now the favorite for the second leg? Because we all know the second leg is going to be at the Allianz Arena.
Is this a question or are you trolling me right now? No, I don't understand. Is this a question?
No, it's a question because judging from the fair, you have to judge from what you watched.
Okay. Let me put my answer.
No, for you to know, I'm not trolling you. You have to judge with two things. You have to judge with Bayern's reputation and their quality, yes. But at the same time, you have to judge with what we watched on Wednesday. So combine the two together and give me an answer.
I think Bayern will win at the Allianz Arena. It just depends on how many goals. I think Villarreal can score, because Bayern, they are very, very vulnerable to counter-attacks. Because if you can, like, it seems like Villarreal, I don't know, Unai Emery has transformed that team. They pass the ball very well, nicely, sharply, and crispy. So if they can pass the ball as nicely as they did at their home, so if they can do that, then I think they will be able to open up Bayern. But the truth is, I think Bayern will be very, very ruthless and clinical. We saw this against Salzburg, where Salzburg, they gave Salzburg a little bit of hope and then they demolished them in the second leg.
While I agree with you that Bayern are stronger, I think you are insulting Villarreal by comparing them to Salzburg. And here is why I say that. Salzburg, their coach just started coaching I did, you know, last season. That's point one. Unai Emery is a beast in European football. I think he has been disrespected because he did not win. He was in charge of PSG when Monaco won the league. But now we can see that it's because they had a beast called Mbappe. And then he did not succeed in Arsenal. But really, who has succeeded in Arsenal in the last 20 years? Who has really succeeded in Arsenal? So people have overlooked all he did with Sevilla. And I don't think that's fair because he has continued with Villarreal. So I don't think they'll be as naive as Salzburg went to Allianz Arena to attack. And I'm like, guy, can you be reasonable and apply a bit of Simeone tactics because you are not Bayern's mate? Which I think Unai Emery would do that. So I don't think Bayern cannot whitewash Villarreal. I'm sure of that. You're not going to see something like 4-0, 5-0. It's not possible. But you can see something like 2-1, 3-1. You can see something like 2-0, 3-1. I can give you that. And I think the quality of players also, but especially the quality of manager. So as much as I agree with you that Bayern will win, is when you called Salzburg, I'm like, please, let's not do Emery like that. Emery is still a very good coach.
Oh, no problem. Fair enough, man. Fair enough.
But then Lewandowski sometimes, he can just go and score 5 goals. So, who knows? Mm-hmm.
Thank God, you know.
We know these things. We know these things. So now let's go to the Premier League. We have what people and what really anybody who watches the Premier League is calling a potential title decider. First of all, let me try and see if we can remove the potential. Is it a title decider, yes or no?
Yes, to a certain extent. Like, the only team that can
your political answer. Is it yes or no?
Yes, it is.
Okay, let me answer the question. I don't think it is. Now, here's why. If it's a draw, 1 point behind City, City can still drop points. If Liverpool win 2 points above, Liverpool still have to play 7 matches, of which United and Tottenham are in that run. And if City win, I think the only way it is over is if it's City that wins. That would be 4 points. I think there's no clawing that back. But if it's a draw or Liverpool win, I don't think it's over.
Okay, fair enough.
But I get why you can say it's a title decider, because at the end of the day, these teams are capable of winning. But at some point, like Liverpool have won, I think 9 or 10 games in a row, something ridiculous like that.
But I want to point out something.
Yeah.
Wait. So, Josh, what does it mean to, if I say me and you are rivals, like, what does that really mean to you? Like, you can use the dictionary meaning, but I want to get your own perspective.
Rivals, it depends. In the football sense, it's like both of us we're in the same class, we're in the same level. So, for example, Tottenham and Crystal Palace are both in London, but they are not rivals because Crystal Palace never reach. You get, there are levels to it. So okay. First of all, you have to be in the same class. And secondly, if you're not in the same class, there has to be a genuine hatred. Like QPR fans hate Chelsea. QPR and Chelsea should not be mentioned in the same sentence normally. But you see that anytime those two clubs play, is always war. Espanyol and Barcelona, same thing.
Okay. Let me give you an example now of why I'm saying this now. So now, if a team, let's say Espanyol and Barcelona, to me, like you can say, because they are in the same time, but is that really a rivalry? It's the Real Madrid Barcelona that is a rivalry in the sense that Real Madrid can beat Barcelona, and Barcelona can beat Real Madrid, and you can see that they can do that equally. But the reason why I'm pointing this out is the media always paint this Manchester City Liverpool as this rivalry, this club Guardiola team. But will you be shocked if I told you that? Will you be shocked if I told you that Liverpool has not beaten Man City since 2019?
Okay, I'm actually shocked. But you know the thing. You know the thing now is they are now judging based on what they have been doing seasons. So I think last season was the only year that Liverpool finished with just 70 something points in the last 4 years. It has been 98, 97, or 96, like ridiculous numbers, which they are going to get above 90 as well this season. So when you're looking at it from that perspective, there's a rivalry, but in terms of the head to head, maybe not so much. But then
the way I'm looking at it is there's a guy that posted this thing on Twitter. So when they now try to bring, they would say Liverpool rivalry. And I'll look at it like the numbers don't add up because Manchester City, I don't know if you remember the when Manchester City smashed Liverpool 5-0. I don't know if you remember that match.
Yeah, but there was a red card, right? To Man.
Yeah, there was a red card, yeah. But still, that was curtains. That was still curtains. But what I'm saying is, if they will not shift it to Klopp versus Guardiola rivalry. Okay, now I'll put it like this. Klopp has been at Liverpool for 8 years. He came to Liverpool, I think, 2016. 2016 till now is like 7 years. Okay, eight years. Let's put it like that. Then I think it's 2015. Yeah, 2015, mid-season. That's where he came. Then Guardiola came in 2017. Like, Klopp has been there before Guardiola, but has only won one Premier League. Guardiola is closing to his fourth Premier League.
We can't do that.
I'm not doing anything. I'm just trying to point out that most times the media try to paint something in order to sell. Do you understand? I just want people to realize that there's certain agendas in the media. I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to disregard what Klopp has achieved a lot with Liverpool. I'm not doing that. But what I'm just saying is, at the end of the day, we need to understand that the media likes to push certain narratives so that it can suit whatever they are selling.
Okay, so you know what they are selling now, which I don't agree with. They are selling that Liverpool and City are the two best teams in Europe. That is what they are selling. Meaning that they are better than Bayern, Real Madrid, and every other club you get to mention, which I don't agree with. I think City are the best team in Europe, but I think Bayern are better than Liverpool. And then I think Bayern are on par with Liverpool. Let me not say better. Being better might be a stretch, but no one can tell me Liverpool is better than Bayern. Like, I will argue it with you. Do you get? So,
the only way I see it is, if it was, let me say, 4 weeks ago, when Bayern had injuries to Neuer, Alphonso Davies, and I think Kimmich was out due to some, I think COVID or something, Goretzka too, But now, if full strength Bayern face full strength Liverpool, I think they are relatively equal.
No, they are equal. See, if you are talking, look, okay, let me put it like this. If we are talking first team, I'm picking Bayern. If we are talking first team, I'm picking Bayern, but Bayern's squad is ridiculously average. Should I bust your head? My opinion, Joshua, RB Leipzig have a better bench than Bayern.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We've talked about this in the previous episode. They don't have that strength in depth. Like, Arsenal, you can obviously...
Arsenal have a better bench than Bayern. So at the end of the day, when we're saying the best team in Europe, we still have to look at the bench. I think that's why Bayern are behind Liverpool in some people's eyes, which is fair enough, I think. But back to what you were saying about Klopp. Let's not forget that Liverpool beat City in the Champions League some years ago. I think in the quarterfinal, yes.
Yeah, I remember.
And then you look at how they've been pushing each other. That's basically the whole argument where this rivalry stuff comes from. Because you asked me my definition, and I said people that are in the same class, the same level, that can fight with each other. And if you look at it, for the last 4-5 years in the Premier League, there have been two people mainly fighting. It's only last year that City strode to the title. The other years, there has been a fight with Liverpool and nobody else. So that is why I think it is a rivalry. Now, the head-to-head is a different discussion. Like, to me, I don't think the head-to-head that they've not won since 2019, I don't think that should remove from the fact that this is actually a rivalry. But then having
the reason why I was pointing out the head-to-head was just to clarify that it might not be as the way people normally think about this fixture. It might not be like that because City has won more since Guardiola came.
Yeah, and then one more thing. In the last 4 years, City have won 3, Liverpool have won 1. Now, to me, I see City as the better side. So to me, this is the 5th year. So to me, if I were the god of football, I would give Liverpool this one, this season's own, just so that it would be like in the last 5 years, Liverpool have won 2, City have won 3. I think that's a fairer representation of what we have been seeing over the years. But then if City win it, it's going to be 4-1. I don't think 4-1 is a fair representation of the last 5 years. But then who am I to say that City don't deserve it if they actually win it? Do you get? Life is not fair sometimes. I think Liverpool, for the way they've played, you say they deserve more than 1 in 5 years, but they have to go out and end.
Let's stop all this thing. Let's move over to the interesting part. What is your prediction? Let me hear. So say it straight.
I should have known that you would do this to me, but I still didn't prepare for a prediction. I'll say Liverpool will not lose.
Okay, cool. This is my prediction. I think Man City will edge it. And I think Phil Foden will be the star of the occasion. That's what I think.
I once again, with every pain and heaviness of my heart, I struggle to argue with that because we know that Foden on his day is almost unplayable. So I can see it happening, but then I also wouldn't bet on it happening, you know, because I can't bet on this game. Like, I'm not even mad. Like, this game, it can finish 2-2. It can finish 3-3. It can finish 3-2 to any side. It can even finish 3-1 to any side. So, these are the games that you avoid making predictions on. So, that's just the way I look at it. Another set of teams that you should avoid making any predictions on is Man U and Everton, because they are both... They've both been very disappointing this season. Obviously, Everton have been more disappointing because they are flirting with relegation. But let's just talk about Man U briefly. They are close to appointing Ten Hag. Good appointment.
Yeah, that's a fantastic appointment. Like, that's a fantastic... I was even reading that if he was to get full control of signings, player decision and all that, I think if they give him that control, I think Ten Hag would do Manchester United. Just wrap up with it. The only reason why managers have failed miserably, even world-class managers like Mourinho, is because they always back the players ahead of the managers. They don't get... It's not like Manchester City, where Guardiola has full control of everything that's going on. So I think if they surround Ten Hag with good footballing people, making the right decisions, and him having somewhat kind of control there, I think he will do well.
Okay, so let me answer the question this way. So to me, it's like he doesn't have the CV and the track record to be given full control of a club like United. And we all know that United has been a very political club over the years. They always like this DNA nonsense. And now we see Fletcher in a position of authority. So all those people will always be there above the manager, above the coach, because I'm not even sure they call them managers these days. He's now head coach.
you know, there are two positions. Yeah, there's head coach, that is manager. So for in Barcelona, you become head coach first before they promote you to manager. It's the same kind of situation with Arsenal. They made Arteta head coach before they now gave him the managerial role. The managerial role now, you're now authorizing signings, contracts, cancelling out players you don't want to your team. So
manager, nobody needs to ask that. Thomas Tuchel is a head coach, I'm sure of that. Klopp is a manager, is he not?
I think he's a manager, yeah.
Very technical stuff. Well, maybe some other time we'll get into it.
Yeah.
But for this game itself, United Everton, it's just a battle.
There's no this thing. Frank Lampard will break a record. Manchester United will smash them. then I pray Burnley gets a good result. Then Everton will see the reality of appointing Frank Lampard as their manager. So that's what I would say.
Okay, so let me just... Okay, so what I wanted to say was, I don't trust both teams, but then I trust Everton even less. So I'll give the win to United. If United don't win, then it's over. They should just get ready to play Europa Conference League, because they cannot even qualify for Europa League like this. Because if you look at it, only fifth place goes to Europa League, which is insane. We have seven clubs fighting for top four, but like we have three or four clubs fighting for the fourth place. I think Chelsea have been dragged into it now. And then only one of those teams that finished fifth will try to go to Europa League. Sixth, Conference League, seventh, just go to your house. So the way United are going is either Conference League or just go to your house. So they need to win Everton. They don't have any excuse. For what you said about Lampard, I think it's harsh. Lampard is not a good coach. Don't get me wrong. Lampard is not a good coach. But then, Everton's situation is not just because of Lampard.
I disagree. No.
Let me just, all the fixtures. Both of us know Lampard is not a good coach. I'm not arguing with you with that one. But then, Benitez was in charge and there was a miserable run for months. The board did nothing about it. They let it fester. The board themselves are at fault for wasting money over the years and buying players who are not good enough, who just have big price tags. I'm not going to mention names, but just look at the Everton squad and you see the people I'm talking about. And so when you have this kind of situation, for you to hire an inexperienced manager, I cannot just blame everything on the manager. Now, Lampard.
The only thing I would say to this is some of the results Frank Lampard has had were shocking. The results that they had, 3 days ago, that was a bad result. And Everton team, with the likes and with the kind of caliber of players they have, shouldn't be losing some of the games they lost on Lampard.
Yeah, I agree. You know where I have a problem with Lampard? He has this all or nothing mentality. Sometimes drawing a game is not the worst thing in the world. Like this Burnley game, to me, some people called it a must win for Everton. I was like, okay, if they win, it's good. But what they should never have done is to lose. It was a must not lose game. Because they still had 4 points above Burnley before the start of the game. So obviously the eagerness to win so that it would be 7 points was there. But then the flip side, if you lose, is 1 point. So I think his approach to games is too gung-ho. Like, he needs to calm down and know that sometimes picking a point here, that's 3 points from three draws. So sometimes he needs to calm down with his attacking philosophy, because he does not even have the players that are good enough to attack. So why not do
should just wrap up with this. I would say this is the beginning of their bad run. And I think Frank Lampard will get sacked in the middle of this month. So they will play Man U. After Manchester United, they will play Leicester. After Leicester, they will play Liverpool. After Liverpool, they play Chelsea. And I don't see them winning. I don't see them getting 3 points. Like, in that run, I just mentioned four games. The highest I see them getting is 1 point, those four games. And that's one point
against Leicester, right?
Against Leicester.
I agree that there's a chance he'll get sacked. But let me ask you this. What are Everton going to achieve by sacking Lampard? If they are going to give him four games, so now the season is 8 games to go, right? Eight games to go. So if you're going to give him 4 games and sack him, what are you going to achieve by bringing a new manager with just 4 games left in the season? You might as well finish with Lampard and try
No. There's something you don't understand. Frank Lampard is the only manager I've seen in the history of football that never had a managerial bounce. So sacking him and bringing someone else to give them that managerial bounce to actually make sure that they help. Exactly.
Yeah. It's hard to argue with that. On that note, I'm about to bounce out because, you know, I'm not like Lampard. I always have the bounce. So Yeah, that's it for me, guys. Take care. Anything you want to add, Leonard?
No, guys. It's good to record again. So we'll see you guys in the next one. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Peace.